Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Three notable things after Trump's meeting with Xi Jinping. The drug boat attacks, one outlier in the Caribbean, and Russian paramilitary units experience setbacks in Central Africa. First, three notable things after Trump's meeting with Xi. In my Tuesday commentary, I evaluated the meeting between President Trump and China's President Xi Jinping in Korea. To hear tell from the U.S. side, you would think Trump pulled off a major trade deal that resolved the key issues with China: U.S. restrictions on sales of advanced computer chips, and Chinese restrictions on sales of rare earth minerals. As I pointed out, the actual deal is full of holes, not just on the chip's rare earth arrangement, but also on a host of other matters, such as Chinese-produced fentanyl, U.S. agricultural exports, especially soybeans, and high U.S. tariffs on Chinese imports. In sum, we can credit the meeting with having eased U.S.-China trade tensions by removing export controls and other regulations for a time. On the other hand, the meeting kicked the can down the road. Promises made and not kept will revive tensions before too long, just as they did in Trump's first term and in Joe Biden's term. The bottom line is that the basis for mutual mistrust has not been addressed and is highly unlikely to be addressed until a new set of leaders emerges in both countries. Here, I want to note three other pieces to the Korea meeting that have gotten much less attention. One is Trump's comments on U.S. nuclear weapons policy. The second is a major topic Trump and Xi did not discuss, Taiwan. The third is a regional meeting Trump decided not to attend, leaving Xi to dominate the stage. Trump threw a curveball into the meeting with an announcement just minutes before he landed that the United States would immediately restart nuclear weapons testing after a lull of 33 years. The announcement came after Russia announced that it had also conducted tests of a nuclear-capable cruise missile and sea drone this week. This is the kind of unpredictable and unwelcome diplomacy typical of Trump. In practice, it probably won't mean U.S. detonation of a nuclear bomb, which would be contrary to the 1996 comprehensive nuclear weapon test ban that the U.S. signed but never ratified. Most likely, Trump wants renewed testing of nuclear weapon delivery systems. Asked whether he believed his directive would create a riskier nuclear environment, Trump offered his usual exaggerated confidence. "I think we have it pretty well locked up." Trump added that the United States was already in talks with Russia about denuclearization and that, quote, China would be added to that. I'll bet that's news to both Moscow and Beijing. Besides their display of new nuclear weapons, the Russians have indicated they will pull out of the Treaty on Plutonium Production, hardly an indicator of denuclearization. China has consistently refused to join U.S.-Russia nuclear weapon talks because it is engaged in a nuclear weapon expansion program as it seeks to narrow the gap with the U.S. and Russia. If anything, Trump's sudden announcement will spur China's expanding nuclear program, especially since Trump has also agreed to provide fuel for a South Korean nuclear-powered submarine and, under Biden, but with Trump's endorsement, to providing Australia with a nuclear submarine under the so-called AUKUS security agreement, that is, Australia, United Kingdom, United States. On Taiwan, prior to meeting with Xi, there had been speculation that Trump would weaken the U.S. commitment to Taiwan's defense in order to get a big trade deal. That didn't happen. In a 60 Minutes interview after returning home, Trump said there was no need to bring up Taiwan with Xi, since Xi knows what would happen if he decided to invade Taiwan. I guess we can say that Trump endorses the longstanding U.S. policy on Taiwan of strategic ambiguity. But Trump also says Xi has assured him that China will not attack Taiwan while Trump is president, an assurance I can almost guarantee Xi did not make. The third neglected topic is Trump's failure to attend a meeting of the Asia-Pacific Economic Forum that took place following the Trump-Xi meeting. Trump chose to return to Washington in time for a Halloween party. Xi stayed in Korea. He used the occasion of Trump's absence to reinforce China's message of economic cooperation to ease supply chains, keep tariffs low, and promote adherence to global trade rules. In short, work with China's rather than the U.S.'s leadership, which he accused, without naming it, of a, quote, return of hegemonism and the law of the jungle. The rougher the seas, said Xi, the more we must pull together. He held separate meetings with the leaders of Japan, Canada, and Thailand. The one with Prime Minister Mark Carney of Canada is notable for Canada's decision to expand trade with China now that Trump is refusing to negotiate. Trump brought home trade agreements with South Korea and Japan, but Xi has established China as Asia-Pacific's trade leader. Not that countries in the region all welcome that development, since China exercises its own brand of trade pressure. But faced with high U.S. tariffs and constant uncertainty about U.S. policy, most Asia-Pacific countries will count increasingly on China's trade, investments, and loans. The drug boat attacks, one outlier in the Caribbean. Nearly all the countries in the Caribbean, as well as the regional organization CARICOM, have expressed guarded concern about the Trump administration's attacks on alleged drug boats coming from Venezuela. In their view, the attacks disturb the peace of the region, a polite way of saying they disrupt ocean traffic and therefore are economically costly. But there's one outlier, Kamala Persad Becesar, Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago. She took office in May and has been unwavering in her support for President Trump, cheering airstrikes against alleged drug boats, allowing U.S. military operations in her country's waters, and permitting an American warship to dock at the capital's main port. On drug smugglers, she has said the U.S. should, quote, kill them all violently. That view has brought about a confrontation with Venezuela's leader, Nicolas Maduro. He has suspended an agreement with Trinidad on offshore oil exploration and has warned Persad Becesar that Trinidad, quote, will suffer the most tragic consequences of any intervention by the U.S. into Venezuela. Persad Becesar is evidently betting that alignment with Trump and a successor regime to Maduro will produce economic benefits that outweigh support of Venezuela's sovereignty. Russian paramilitary units experience setbacks in Central Africa. Russia's Africa Corps, successor to the Wagner Group that had essentially replaced U.S. and French military trainers in Central African states, apparently is now on the outs with those countries. In June, the Washington Post reports, Wagner mercenaries left Mali, their reputation in tatters, because of their failure to blunt insurgent advances and their history of slaughtering civilians in the name of providing security. Military juntas in Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, according to a senior U.S. military officer, are now experiencing buyer's remorse after ousting U.S. and French troops over the 3 years past and, to varying degrees, accepting Moscow's help fighting Al-Qaeda and Islamic State insurgents. They're starting to ask for help, the Malians in particular, said the senior U.S. military official. Will the U.S. and France be able to take advantage of the Russians' failures? One who thinks so is none other than Eric Prince, a Trump ally who is said to be offering his company's security services to Central African states. In other words, replacing one set of mercenaries with another. In other news, Vietnam is tilting Russia's way. Vietnam reportedly is exasperated with the United States. The elimination of U.S. aid for clean energy and HIV prevention, Trump's tariffs, indifference to requests for a leader-to-leader meeting, a Trump golf development near Hanoi that has forced local residents from their land. All these have alienated Vietnamese leaders who would prefer a balanced relationship among China, Russia, and the United States. Their interests are being ignored. Trump goes after European climate rules. The Trump administration is seeking to undermine environmental protection rules abroad as well as at home. It recently succeeded at thwarting a United Nations-sponsored regulation that would have imposed a pollution tax on international shipping. The administration is also lobbying against an European Union directive that establishes a corporate due diligence duty intended to apply to thousands of companies in and outside the EU. The core elements of this duty, the EU says, are identifying and addressing potential and actual adverse human rights and environmental impacts in the company's own operations, their subsidiaries, and those of their business partners. In addition, the directive sets out an obligation for large companies to adopt and put into effect through best efforts, a transition plan for climate change mitigation. Trump's energy department joined the government of Qatar in warning the EU that it's risking higher prices for critical energy supplies unless it alters or deletes the directive. The implicit threat is that U.S. investment and trade policies will change otherwise. Next, the U.S. finds hundreds of Israeli human rights violations. A classified report by the State Department's Office of Inspector General has found that Israeli military units committed, quote, many hundreds of potential violations of U.S. human rights law in the Gaza Strip that would take the State Department multiple years, that's a quote, to review, according to two U.S. officials who relayed the details to the Washington Post. But the prospects are dim that the department will ever advocate denial of military aid to Israel, as is required under U.S. law, and as many congressional critics of Israel have been urging for over a year. Israel has always enjoyed an advantage in reviews by the State Department of its human rights record. According to a former U.S. State Department official, when it comes to Israel, a U.S. working group, not just one official, as in most cases, must reach, quote, a consensus on whether a gross violation of human rights has occurred. Then Israel must be consulted as to what action it has taken. Finally, the Secretary of State must sign off. Under Biden, this process began but never reached the stage of cutting off military aid to Israel. Now, there won't even be a start. A related story. Top Israeli military judge is arrested over incriminating video. Israel's top military judicial officer has been arrested after she leaked a video that showed Israeli Defense Forces soldiers abusing a Palestinian prisoner. Yifat Tomer Yerushalmi said in a resignation letter last week that she had authorized publication of the video to defuse attacks on military investigators and prosecutors working on the case. The beating of the prisoner occurred at the notorious Sdeid Taimon Military Detention Center, which in 2024 had been raided by military prosecutors because of the use of torture by the IDF. Right-wing politicians and pundits called the soldiers detained in the case heroes, and they attacked military investigators as traitors and called for the case against the soldiers to be dropped. Prime Minister Netanyahu defended the abuses, saying, quote, "This is perhaps the most severe public relations attack that the State of Israel has experienced since its establishment." Five soldiers were charged in the case but never served time in jail or were otherwise punished. Tomer Yerushalmi was concerned that the 2024 incident and other cases of prisoner abuse were being swept under the rug, leaving military lawyers rather than the IDF abusers as targets of attack. Israeli critics point out that her arrest shows that Israel's judicial system is far less independent than is usually claimed. Undermining the case for asylum. In an extraordinary undermining of asylum petitions, the Department of Homeland Security asked a judge this month to deport a father of two to Afghanistan, where he expects the Taliban to kill him. To make its case, the department did not accuse him of any crime or disloyalty or act of terrorism. Instead, attorneys argued that Afghanistan, a country U.S. forces rescued him from in 2021, is safe for his return. The man rightly fears for his life, since he publicly supported the U.S. cause in Afghanistan and worked for a U.S.-based nonprofit in Kabul. Homeland Security's argument that Afghanistan is safe is absurd and seems to be motivated by the administration's determination to get rid of the roughly 200,000 Afghan refugees in the United States. The legal case is ongoing in Virginia. Finally, an update on Trump's tariffs in advance of the Supreme Court's decision. The Senate rebuked President Trump's trade policy for the third time in as many days, voting 51-47 last week to eliminate the national emergency underpinning Trump's global tariffs announced in April. The resolutions followed two others earlier this week to eliminate duties on goods from Canada and Brazil, respectively. These votes are only symbolic, however, since the House previously voted against any attempt to eliminate the tariffs. While most Republicans voted no on ending Trump's tariffs, four did vote in favor. Senators Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Rand Paul of Kentucky, and Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.